Welcome to the Corporate Corner. My name is Mats Andersson.
And I'm Mariel Green Andersson.
We'll share with you conversations with people from around the world about their corporate experiences.
At TCC, we look forward to together creating community.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Corporate Corner. Hope you are doing well out there, whether you are in strict lockdown or easing of the confinement like in many European countries. And I guess you're all slowly getting used to your face masks. I am not. I am struggling with it, but I'm using it. It is, I think it's so difficult when you can't see the mouth of people. I'm really looking forward to it. I can't hear what people are saying. I'm looking forward to the digital face mask where you have subtitles coming out where the mouth is. I hope someone can invent that because it's getting really difficult. And it seems like we're going to be with this mask for a while. So happy for the feedback on the last episode. A lot of listeners in the Nordic countries, Denmark, Sweden. We have listeners in Poland, my Czech friends, Netherlands, and even a listener in Panama. This is so cool. If you want to help the show, pass it on to one person and I would be so delighted. Would be great. Today's episode is with a very special guest, John Ireland. John has meant a lot to me. I've been on many of his management trainings, leadership trainings, emotional intelligence trainings, and they're all just great. It's like a little place where people meet and get away from the hectic real world, get to know each other and learn a lot of things about themselves, about others, and hopefully coming together and working better as a team. I really, really appreciate John and the way he runs his training, and I really appreciated this discussion we had. We get to learn why John is how he is, his background, where he comes from, and how he came into this leadership development role. And it is getting a little bit emotional at times, and I'm so grateful for John to be open and vulnerable and just letting me publish all this uncut. It's a very strong message. And thank you, John, for this amazing talk, and hope your listeners will like it too. Without further ado, here comes John Ireland. So today I am here with a very special guest, John Ireland. Welcome, John, to the Corporate Corner.
Well, thank you, Mats. I'm absolutely delighted to be here. Real pleasure. I've listened to a lot of the podcasts and I really like the philosophy and the way that you present what you present. So I hope that through the conversation we have today that we can offer something for listeners that may get them thinking and may be useful.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much, John. Maybe a couple of introduction words on yourself from you. I mean, I could also say that you are a fantastic coach, a leadership coach, and I've been really, you've really made a big difference for me. But give us a little overview of your story and how you came there.
Okay. It's a lovely question. I've just come off the back of working with a leadership team in Ireland, actually, digitally. And in my introduction, it's a lovely time. I said, I've become the person that I would have liked to have had at my side when I was 15 and a half. And I'll explain that a little bit through my biography. I grew up in the northwest of England in an industrial town. I grew up playing rugby, quite a successful sportsman and doing quite well at school. My mother died when I was 11, very, very suddenly, and my dad did a really great job in you know, giving his best to bring me up. And I realized that I had, in those days, I sort of lost my path some. And I never really, I feel, in the opportunities I'd had, I'd made the most of those opportunities. I spent the first 6 years of my life working as a chef, working in restaurants, cooking in restaurants, had a great time. And then I worked in my spare time in the UK for an organization called the Samaritans, who help people who were in a really difficult situation, and they still do. They do a magnificent job. And I did the training to do this and started working with people in really, really bad situations, loneliness, sometimes with thoughts and actions towards suicide. But I developed a feeling for working with people and a curiosity. And based on this experience, for which I was very grateful, I went and studied psychology. And it was really nice. I made a conscious choice. And because I was committed and it was my choice, as I say, I had a great time. I really enjoyed learning. And from then on, Mats, I just moved into the corporate world in organizational development. And as I developed a thirst and curiosity to develop myself, my own personality, then I started to translate that into my work in terms of coaching teams, individuals, also organizations in cultural development, and have developed now 25 years of international experience doing this. And yeah, it's been a really, really cool journey, and I feel very, very lucky to have found the thing that I'm good at and I'm passionate about. And thank you for your kind feedback.
That's beautiful. I mean, I remember how I came across you the first time. It was that I was the manager of this branch in Prague, having building up a leadership team, and we sent everybody to John. And then at some point in time, and everybody came back. They were so delighted. They were so happy. And this was, I mean, young engineers who were getting their first management experience. So they were getting kind of a driving license. And then I realized that I was a manager without no training. it's pretty funny, because I was thinking of that as coming here, and that parenting and management is the two things that are probably the most important things you can do in life, and both you get without a license.
Yeah.
So that's when I went and enjoyed your trainings and many of them afterwards. Isn't it a paradox, this, that you can both management and parenting is the two things you can do without any license, and they are the most important things on earth, more or less.
Yeah, I mean, you are taking on the responsibility for people, both in your private life. You know, you're producing, providing the next generation, the future. And you're in a business context, you're taking on the responsibility for the people. You know, I listened to Stefan's podcast, Mutual Friend, and I loved what he was saying about, you know, just how important people are, and you know, this focus upon people and how little focus we give this, and it's so true.
And do you think this is changing, that people are getting, because I mean, traditionally it was in this industrialization world, there was the people were not the most important. Do you see an evolution now, or getting better, or?
I do. I mean, at any point in time, we're in a period of transformation. Where I see us at the moment is on the one side, I think we're living in an emotional revolution where we are able to talk about, think about, work with feelings and emotions, and there is a growing acceptance of it. I think there are cultures that have come from the past which are still more task-driven than people-driven. And I also think, though, on the one side, it's not okay. On the other side, I do understand it, because a lot of the people who have responsibility in companies, just like I did, I never really learned this. You know, I learned this thing about, you know, dealing with people, you know, emotions drive behaviors. You know, the work that I do in terms of developing, helping people in developing their emotional intelligence abilities, and to develop an insight, an understanding, and an awareness to be more conscious as to how I behave, more conscious about the attitude I bring to certain situations. And, you know, as soon as we get more and more people with this curiosity and thirst and skill, you know, we'll get more and more transformation.
Yeah.
On the other side, just to add on there, I think for me, just on the other side of it as well, is that what I think is wonderful, you know, I look at my oldest two kids, 26 and 24, you know, but they're demanding it now.
Yeah.
And I think organizations need to wake up to really, really consider the focus and the quality of people leadership that they are providing. Because these days, young people aren't quite as loyal. If organizations don't fulfill their development commitment to these young people, you know, they go to the places and the people where they'll get it from, and they do get it from.
Yeah, that's for sure. That it can change from a bottom up approach with the new generation asking for other things. But if you take a manager who has been kind of on autopilot for his whole life and heard this mantras a little bit the last about people, you mentioned some important things about consciousness and awareness and that could really change things. I'm convinced that. But how do you approach it, and how do you train people to ultimately be more conscious?
I mean, what I experience, Matt, is the people who want it, they come.
Yeah.
It's the people I don't get to see are the ones that I'd really love to work with. I believe if we want to learn something, we will, right? And I get people coming to me, both on the coaching and the training side of it, who want to, who want to learn. And I mean, I'm going to throw the question back to you, Matt. You know, you came to one of my seminars, to use your term, to maybe get the first phase of the license for leading people. But what was it that attracted you, you know, emotionally or in terms of the content, where you came and you wanted to come back? And I think that's what we need to be offering in order to be able to support people in their development. And the other thing as well is, your question was, you know, how do we get this manager to me, whether it be man or woman, to develop themselves? I think we need to also not forget there are a lot of really good people about. The problem is we don't focus on the good people. You know, we pick up the problem cases. And with a lot of organizations I work with, I mean, your ex-company, you know, there are some fabulous leaders in that company who are doing a great job, who are making people feel emotionally secure in their job, and are developing them in the corporate situation to bring more than they ever dreamed of.
Yeah, I mean, that is so true. And this is pretty funny you say this, because when I think a lot of the middle management in my ex-company went through your trainings.
And
I remember coming back from the first one, I directly went to the responsible HR person and said, look, we need to we cannot only have it on the lower and middle mm-hmm. management level. We need to have the executive mm-hmm. board going through John's training. Mm-hmm. And the answer was, no, we cannot show John to the executive board. He will be out. So
I never knew that.
It was pretty funny, but I think it's fantastic if you have a leadership team like we had, many people who had gone through a similar training or same training and with an emotional consciousness aspect of it, then the whole language is changing because everybody has been through this kind of license and you can relate to each other much better.
Yeah, I think there's two aspects. I'll pick up on what you said there, which I think is nice, is obviously the more people we get in an organization that have a similar philosophy around giving people a focus, we have a cultural change.
Yeah.
You know, we need this sort of 30% to get to a tipping point where there's a momentum of cultural change, of moving the focus to people and to getting the best out of people. And I think also that what we need to do, what I'm experiencing in companies, is that we bring these good people together and realize they're not alone. I did a piece of work last year, and it was in a different company, but it was looking about developing, you know, coaching skills for leaders. And I had two people on the course, and they said, this is so refreshing because I thought I was alone with my philosophy. And I thought this was really, really interesting. And we talked about it, and I think that, you know, this silent majority, this people who have it, we need to give them a voice and an awareness in an organization that they are doing a really great job. People are fulfilled and they're getting the business results. And I think this is really important activity and action within an organization. The second point I'd like to pick up is it's not one person that leads a company, it's hundreds. I think sometimes we get the focus upon the board, maybe a CEO, and he, she has an important role. And we also have, depending upon the size of the company, hundreds of people, sometimes in companies, thousands of people who have the responsibility for people, and we need to get to as many of them as possible. And that is, you know, my work, if you like, and what I really, really enjoy is getting to, I mean, I work a lot with boards as well. Yeah. And I enjoy working with middle management because they have the contact with everybody. I did some years ago, a presentation at a large conference in Germany about the importance of the target group of leaders. And I looked at the demographic statistics of a normal leader, you know, yeah. How many are married, how many are divorced, how many have got kids, how many do sport, how many do friends do people have on average. And if we just focused upon leaders, then we would more or less touch everybody in our society,
yeah.
both in terms of kids and as well as in terms of employees in a company. And, you know, in my philosophy of work, you know it, I mean, I'm developing leaders, but I'm developing people to be more conscious people and to enjoy a more conscious life, and that they take into their homes as well as they do into the office. This is, for me, is the importance and the beauty of what I do and other people that do similar things to what I do. I think this is the, you know, the purpose, the vision in terms of our work. And I think it's, you know, I find it very motivating.
Absolutely. And but it is training, isn't it? I mean, just, you,
yeah.
It's we all think that we all know that if we go for a run, if we go to the gym, we're going to get stronger. But we rarely think that if we train our leadership capacity, we would be a better leader. It's kind of a lack there. You go to a seminar, and then you're back, and you often in your environment, and you often kind of it fades out. So it is important to keep the muscle
working hard. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, again, I mean, I think this is a great point. Is I mean, I heard a lovely radio interview, and it's a story I use sometimes about a famous British climber. I don't know his name. It wasn't Simpson. I've forgotten his name, but it was at a time when there were 11 people had died on the mountain K2. They were caught in a storm, and they were interviewing the climber, and his goal had been to climb the top 11 mountains in the world at the highest, and he'd done 9 of them. They were saying, listen, you know, Mats, you know, as the climber, why are you successful? And he said, well, my goal, he said, it's not to get to the top of the mountain. He said, my goal is to get back to base camp and to be able to tell the story. And we often get seduced by the top of a mountain. And when we think about a development intervention, it can be coaching, it can be a seminar, that's the top of the mountain. And the responsibility of those involved is to get back to base camp, which is the changes and living the quality of leadership of life that they want, you know, their vision of this. And as the story of the mountain, why I love it so much is when you hear stories about the trek back from the top of the mountain, the peak of the mountain, back to base camp.
Yeah.
Nobody ever really talks about that.
No, that's so true. It's all about the journey at the end. I mean, you need to find some happiness in the journey. Otherwise, you'll be on a constant roller coaster of deceptions or looking for the next mountain top.
Yeah. I mean, I think we need to want it. I think, you know, I mean, one of the big things for me in, you know, in working in with leaders and in organizations, you know, I speak to people and I hear what they do in their spare time, and people do amazing things. I had a guy I know at the moment who he runs 2 or 3 marathons. He's over 40 and he's running the best times of his life. And I ask myself, does your company get the qualities and the use the qualities you have as an individual that you're using to achieve these running goals? You know, I see people with hobbies. One of my jobs I had a guy who was doing an essential but simple administrative job. And in his spare time, he'd set up and was running an American football team. And he trained himself to be a coach. He'd learnt the rules. He'd gotten sponsors. He'd registered the team for the league. He'd motivated people to come and train with him. He'd organised friendly games. And he'd got in one of the lower leagues, but he put this team together. And I was looking at what he did in his day job and listening to what he was doing in his spare time. And I'm thinking, this is criminal. Yeah. I need this in the company. You know? So, you know, in terms of leadership and culture, you know, how do we activate and get the best out of people?
But you are very curious about people. I mean, I think that is natural for you. And I'm the same. I'm always kind of interested in people. But some people are not like that. I mean, some people are more interested or less interested in the human aspect and more in the... How can you help these people to help them, or do they have to change?
I mean, this is a lovely question. I love this, Mats. It's really, really cool. You know, I've done some work in the car industry and, as you know, in the finance industry and technical, other companies based on technical skills. And one lovely story for me was about a guy who he developed motor engines for high performance sports cars, you know. And I picked him up in a coaching and was helping him, and he'd started building engines because he hated people, right? he learned, right, at home and in his youth, people hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how many people, you know, could go into software? I mean, I talk with senior managers in technical companies, you know, and I tell this story and they laugh and they just nod and say, yeah, you know, we don't all grow up blessed with an environment or a family environment where these, you know, dealing, living and acceptance of emotions is a part of everyday life. So a lot of these people head off to a job where they don't have to deal with people. It's a lot easier, you know, to change the carburetor or these days to, you know, rewrite the software to get the performance out of an engine than it is to deal with somebody who's not very good mood or has got a difficult personality. Yeah. Now, my point here is, and that it's something, A, we can all learn, right? Important is that we want to learn it. And again, a lovely, lovely story from a seminar on emotional intelligence. And I had a guy in the group who was 56, 57. And at the beginning, we were talking about the expectations, you know, as I was saying, well, you know, why are you here? And he just looked at me and he smiled and he said, John, I'm here to learn what I didn't learn at home when I was growing up. How the bloody hell do you deal with these emotions? And I include myself in this as well. Right?
That's so good.
<You know? laughs> So I think for me, in my work, I can tell I'm starting to get passionate on this one here. You've hitting all the right buttons, Mats. it's okay if you don't have it. You can still learn it, right?
Yeah.
And if you learn it, and this was, again, with this, I was a lovely, lovely leadership team and their boss I was working with today. You know, it's okay. All I need from you is a desire to want to learn. And we'll head off on the journey. So it's people admitting and saying, listen, I don't have it, but I'd like it. Can you help me? You know, three easy sentences, but not so easy for people to say openly. And that is, I believe, is, you know, how can we make it as easy and as simple for people and as emotionally safe as possible for people to come and develop these skills and these attitudes?
Yeah. Well, one thing I noticed is that you seem to have an extreme high acceptance for people. You seem to never judge. I mean, I'm working hard on that because I realize when starting becoming more aware of my mind that it is an extremely judgmental mind I having, and I'm working very hard on letting go of that, even if it doesn't necessarily look like that from the outside. But you seem to be so acceptant. You seem of different people, and that, I think that's what makes the success. And how do you develop this, like, inclusion of everybody, even if people maybe who don't want to be on your training or are sent there by the HR?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really, really, thank you. That's a really, really lovely feedback, Matt. So I'm very touched by that. Thank you. I get a bit emotional myself. thank you. I mean, I mentioned before that, pardon me, important step for me in this direction was when I did the work with the Samaritans in the UK and the training I got, because part of the training was just being able to listen to people. And in my early 20s, then in the training, I was confronted with my prejudices and the awareness of my prejudices and where they came from. And this was a real big help for me and a big step. And I think that in my development, and then, you know, as I've gone on, and okay, through my training, my coach training, which was brilliant, and I went on and did like a level one therapy training as well. You know, it's all about attitude, and you are working with so many different people. And, you know, I'd like to be accepted. excuse me, you can send this. I'd have no problem with it. I'd like to be accepted as I am, you know, with all my qualities, with all my difficulties, you know, and sometimes I'm a pain and sometimes I'm lovely to be with, but I am as I am. And I greet people with an open attitude, and I'd like to be accepted. And so the nicest thing I can do is to try and accept others. And I think that, you know, I heard a lovely quote, everybody knows something I don't. And, you know, in any situation, you know, you can go into a store in the States, a shop in Germany or the UK, and, you know, and you can be served by somebody and you can think, wow, that was nice. Now, that was really good. I'd like someone to do that. Or if you have a bad experience, you can also say, I don't want to do it like that. I'd do it differently, you know. So there's a bit of a gratefulness in me as well in all this contact with people because, you know, I'm learning from them and developing as well. But the basis of that is this curiosity and openness. And it doesn't mean to say that, you know, I'm accepting of people and I also decide who I want to spend my time with, you know. I think all of us, you know, we're all very different and some people bring the best out of me and some people don't do that. So I try and spend more time with the people where I feel good and do me good than those that don't do me good. So I'm not saying we have to get on with everybody, but I feel that the first basis, the first step, and particularly in my work and the work that, you know, other people do similar to myself is this openness and acceptance for people because they then open and then you can work with that openness. And I just think that that's, you know, it's an important basis, you know, in getting the most and enjoying people. How does that sound?
It sounds beautiful. I'm thinking of something you said that you choose your time to spend with people. Is that something you would recommend? Because sometimes we spend a lot of time with people. We feel maybe energy drained. We feel maybe it's negative, but we could think that this is good for my development. But would you recommend to spend time where you feel always good or where you have always kind of positive interactions, or should you go for the hardship?
I think that's a choice. I mean, let me just say one thing before we move on to that. You know, I don't always get it right, okay? I don't want people to think here, you know, bloody hell, you know, this guy must always get it right. I don't, you know, I have bad days and I have good days as well, you know, and sometimes, you know, I'm tired and frustrated. I'm not nice. You know, it's an aspiration, you know, it's an attitude, if you like, it's a way of living I enjoy. I aspire to it. And as I say, hopefully these days I get it more right than I get it wrong, but I still don't always get it right. And going back to what you're saying, I mean, I've had the pleasure and the honor of also working with, you know, professional sports people. And when I did this, I worked out a definition of sport. And I'll come to your answer in a second. And my definition of sport is that in professional sport, I can bring my best performance in the moment that I need it, okay? Yeah. Comma, I want it. I bring my best performance when I want and need it, right? And that means I need to know what my best performance is. I need to be able to regulate myself emotionally to get myself in the attitude to bring it, you know, 3 o'clock, on a Saturday afternoon, kick off, 8 o'clock at night, tip off in basketball. I need to be there to be able to bring my best. I'm part of a team in team sport, in individual sport. I have a start. I need to be able to bring it. And I think that it's important that we have an environment around us that brings the best out of us, right? And that means also a choice of people that that help me bring my best and I help others bring their best. Now, life, even if that's my vision, throws the odd, you know, situation where I meet people that I don't find easy to get on with, you know, or they trigger me and I have to deal with it. So I think it's an and. I think if somebody comes along, and I had a case last year, somebody really triggered me and wasn't good, and we weren't good for each other. But this particular person actually, because of it, helped me learn and develop. Mm-hmm. Now, I learned some, and I also chose not to spend time with this person because, you know, this person lives the way they live. They want to live that way, and they can do. I accept it. I respect it. And I want as little as possible to do with it, right? And I think, so those are the choices that we have. Now, in the leadership situation, this is pretty much impossible. And you need to be able to learn to deal with different personalities and characters in order to do your job efficiently and effectively, right? Mm. And this is, for me, you know, some people inherit a team and they have a potpourri of personalities. Some are easier, some are difficult. And there I think it's really, really, shall we say, a good set of skills to have the attitude and the tools and methods to deal with these different personalities, because the context is bringing them together. And in that context, a leader's job, part of their responsibility, is to activate others to get the best out of each other, but also to be able to deal with difficult situations and difficult personalities.
Yeah, that absolutely, and that's the most common and most difficult, and to inherit a team, because that you have to. It's easy if you handpick your team.
Yeah,
then you'll have exactly the team you want, and you need less. You need to lead less. They probably work out fine then, because you know them.
Yeah.
Coming back to something very interesting you said, and because we both come from a sports background.
Yeah,
I totally agree with you that you need to know when you can perform best, and you need to get it out at that moment. And when you work with people who come from a sport background in the corporate, you see it directly.
Yes.
But the corporate world is kind of expecting maybe not 100% output all the time, but a very high output, which is not. It's not possible. I mean, when I was a cyclist, I was pretty average in training, but I was kind of good in the races on the weekends.
Yeah.
And I could really, I knew what it had to take to be good on the race, but on the training it was difficult. But in the corporate, you have to be, it's not working like that, but I feel like it kind of should work like that, because you can't be on 100% all the time, but you're expected to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is a great point. I mean, you know, people compare, shall we say, working in a corporate environment with, let's say, a cycle race. You know, let's say, you know, you've got I did a couple of gigs in the UK. You know, we're talking, I don't know, 150 miles, 230 kilometers in a day, you know.
Yeah.
And with something like that, you've got a start and a finish, and you know, you prepare for the start, you put the time in to do the race, you cross the line, and everything's around you to be able to recuperate, to be able to eat, to drink, a massage, and you prepare then for the next race. Now, in the corporate world, the start line is your birth, and the finish line is your death, right? Okay.
Yeah.
We don't have, you know, it's not like a marathon. It's not like anything. We as individuals need to learn, as you said before, it's a journey, and we need to learn to take care of ourselves. We need to learn to be able to look after the motor. I mean, I recently heard somebody say, if you only got one car for your whole life, how would you look after it? Yeah. And you only get one body, right? But most people look after their car better than they look after their own body, right?
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I feel we and I think we need to teach kids this. And it's an attitude that it's about, in the corporate environment, taking care of ourselves, both physically as well as emotionally. And that means that we need to do a little bit of movement and activity. You know, if we take care of what we eat, and we also take some downtime, we have a hobby, a distraction. And as you know, our passionate topic is that of mindfulness, of the self-awareness, and taking the time to be able to allow, you know, the old parasympathetic system to have its downtime, then, and also to recognize there will be phases where we will be close to the red zone, right? But to realize it, to acknowledge it, and I'll be there for a while, but to make the changes I need in order to stay there in extremely difficult situations. So I think we need an attitude, which is, how important am I in my life? And how much do I take care of myself so that I can do what I want to do with others and for others? And this is in the family as well as in the working environment. So I think then, in the corporate culture, Mats, is what culture do we have in terms of taking care of people? Are we in an environment where we ask people how they are? If people are not doing so well, you know, we help them make sure they take care of themselves. If they're really running hot and they're having a good day, you know, maybe how we give them more, and how they get the self-fulfillment out of, you know, completing that project, that task, or what they've been set. So I think we need a different mentality to taking care of ourselves in the corporate world than we do in the sporting world. I think the sporting world is ahead of us on this topic.
Yeah, it's surely different. It's more. Yeah, it's going on for less long, but the race, as you said, the race in the corporate is starting and then ending sometime very late.
Yeah.
But how do you think, and as an individual, in an organization, because how should you take care of yourself? Because there's always a risk that you, regardless how good you are, you're gonna end up on the line. You never know if the company goes through hardship. I think now there is many companies going through hardship. I heard just recently a friend told me there's a friend of him has a company in Germany with 600 engineers working for the automotive industry, and they risked like being all, they are, I think, furloughed now, and they could all be laid off. So at the end, you never know what's going to happen, regardless of how good you are. How would you recommend people to take care of themselves? Maybe not necessarily as leaders, but as individuals in an organization.
And I think if I can pick up two aspects of this, and ask me another question if I don't really answer your question that you've asked now. I think one of the things is that, how attractive do I keep myself for a company and a potential employer? Right. I think that and my experience here is, when I talk to leaders and myself, what makes me attractive is my attitude, you know, my ability to show initiative, to speak out, to bring my motivation every day to work. To have a constructive attitude, not always presenting a problem, but making, suggesting solutions. Whatever this is, I think there's a personal responsibility to take care of the product, which is you, me, or any of the people we've talked about. The second point, I think, you know, life throws us this curved ball, like this virus at the moment, and there are situations like this where they're unforeseen, and an organization needs to make some really tough and hard decisions in order to be able to survive. And I know myself from a couple of friends with companies in the UK and in Germany, you know, the attitude in the organization is, you know, we'll do our best to keep the company alive. And this may mean that we need to actually reduce time, you know, or we need to get rid of some people. And also, hopefully, in the philosophy of the company, that we can pick up again so that we can take people back on board. Now, individually, how can I take care of myself is in order to be able to really be able to, I think, ask for help if you need it. I think if at the moment a lot of people are confronted with a stressful situation and a situation they've never had before, emotionally, and they're lost as to what to do. And a lot of us, when we're in that situation, you know, we maybe, you know, have the extra beer or glass of wine in the evening, which actually numbs the feelings that we don't want to be confronting. And here I think it's, you know, being open and honest with ourselves. I am afraid, you know, I promised my kids this and that. I don't know if I'll be able to fulfill my commitment. I don't want to disappoint anybody. And people are challenged with this. And I think it's the time to be able to seek help. It could be a friend, you know, just to somebody to talk openly about this, to be able to share the problem. And if they need some more professional help, to be able to go out and look for it. That's to the emotional level. And I think as well is, you know, how can I accept that this is the situation I'm in? And maybe to be able to say, you know, are there any opportunities in this situation which I can take advantage of? I know several people who are on short time in companies and they are eating webinars as quickly as they can in order to develop themselves and make themselves fitter for the job. But I need the openness, the acceptance to be able to do all that. And I think that that's the starting point. How does that sound for you? What do you think?
That sounds good. I pick up on a couple of things you said there. Maybe if I start with the last thing you said. I talked to so many people over the last month and a half that I haven't talked to before. I feel that there is a moment really of connection. I mean, on a one-on-one basis, not being in a Zoom call, but I really feel that there is this energetic need to get in touch, and we are getting in touch more in these days. But maybe this is not for everyone. I don't know, but I feel it like that. And
I mean, that's my experience, Matt. I noticed that. I don't want to, you know, ignore the tragedy, the difficulty, what people are going through, what our healthcare systems around the world are doing in order to help people. You know, I think that it's amazing the way the world has mobilized itself in order to be able to deal with the situation. I think people have gone through an amazing, you know, learning process to deal with the situation, even if it's, you know, now having to work from home. And I think organizations need to be giving their employees for achieving this, you know, incredibly, incredibly steep learning curve, lots of recognition and thanks for what people have done. And I believe that it's also throwing up a lot of opportunities. And one of them is people are starting to take responsibility for themselves and getting in touch with people and talking to each other and starting to share their concerns.
Yeah,
I had a good friend of mine recently in IT, and I'd not heard from him and I was getting a bit worried. I sent him a WhatsApp. I didn't hear anything. So I kept phoning him up, and eventually he phoned me back. And we had a laugh. We had a chat, and he said, oh, I should have phoned you earlier. And I said, yeah, you should have done. Yeah, and he said, I will. And now we chat once a week, you know.
That's nice.
And I think that this is, you know, And I experienced this a lot. You know, a couple of people in a company, you know, one of them I'd spoken to, this person reached out to me and we'd had a couple of conversations. And then, you know, I said, is there anybody that you can sort of buddy up with so you can talk to this? And, you know, they buddied up and they go out and meet 2 meters apart and have a walk and a chat. And they talk when they need to. And I think that I think this is really positive. Not everybody can do that and not everybody's doing it. But like anything, you know, there's still the hardship, the pain, you know, maybe the loneliness that some are going through. And there are others as well that are feeling they're, you know, they're being activated at this moment in time. New opportunities, people are being forced into doing some things they didn't think that they need to or could do, but they're doing it. And I just think that's absolutely such a, people need real credit for that. And I hope people feel proud for what they're doing.
Yeah, no, I agree. It there's something happening under the surface, yeah. Beyond all the misery and the political shouting.
Yeah.
That is probably beautiful in a way, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Coming back to something else you said, because I've thought a lot of that over the years. You said make yourself attractive for the company and don't necessarily come with problems. I have two problems with that.
Cool. Come on then.
No, so for example, if you're a software engineer, you work on whatever, you work on C++, or you work on Java, and you're really useful because that's what your company's system is running on. And you are most useful for your company continuing working on that product, most likely, because that is what's bringing the money in for the company. But then they start this new thing, which works on another, and then you could easily you have these people who jump from, they only want to learn new things all the time. It could appear that they are extremely useful for the company, but they are not necessarily in the core production line, so to say. That's one thing. I think it's tricky, because if you want to stay on the top of the game all the time, unless you're a genius and can learn things very fast, it's difficult. And the other thing is this coming with problems. This is so, something I often hear. I think one of the, in my ex-company, one manager who came in there for a while always said this, don't come with the problem to me. I want you to come with solutions. But what I've seen over the years, it's often that you have these grumpy old guys that... knows often a lot about the company. They know a lot about the systems. They know a lot about the processes. And when they say this is not possible, they appear as coming with problems. But often what they bring is something real, and that this is like, it's not going to work if we do it like this. And they bring, and then I think it's more as a manager, you need to be able to take in that and turn that around rather than having them necessarily change.
Absolutely. I think you've hit on two really, really interesting points in leadership. And if I can bring up two examples, if I can pick up the last one first, you know, for me, these are people, and this is in, you know, my work, if people are resistant, continually resistant, you know, it's as a result of their biography and the way they were brought up. And, you know, if you're a sort of a high-performing manager and you've got somebody who keeps coming with problems and it feels like, you know, it's blocking you, then these people are really frustrating. Now, but the point is, you know, there's an emotional background to this. And if as a leader I understand it, then I can actually lead these individuals very differently and still get the best out of them. And I give you a lovely, lovely example. In my last leadership job, I moved into this job, running an academy operations manager, and I had a product manager who came to me and kept saying, and I moved in at a time where we really needed to move things and do a lot very, very quickly in order to keep the market and keep the position on the market. And so all my performance parts in my personality jumped up and was, you know, maker, shaker, do it. And I had one person who kept coming to my office and saying, oh, you know, don't know about this, don't know about that. And it was really frustrating me. And then, and this is about being open for people on what they bring that I don't have. I needed to produce a presentation for the owners of the company. And I asked this person to check my presentation. And they came back. And with this sort of, you know, see the problem attitude, they picked out some big mistakes that were in my presentation. And as a result of this person who looked at it, and if ever she should listen to this, her first name is Tanya. And I realized, and this was my problem, you know, I had not seen the quality of what she was bringing. And I went and did the presentation. It went really, really well. And I went back into the office and I called her in. I said, listen, I said, I have to apologize to you, because I've really put you under a lot of pressure and I've not dealt you fair with you fairly and well. I'm really grateful for what you've done here, made a big difference. And as I say, I can only apologize. And I hope that you can see it within yourself to forgive me, you know, and that we get a fresh start. And we sat down and we talked about it, and she was saying, yeah, you know, I'm new in the job. I've had no direction in the past. I'm really nervous, and I'm really nervous about making a mistake. And this is why, you know, I just need some confidence in what I'm doing. And once we talked openly about it and the situation was more relaxed, you know, she'd walk into my office and she was great. I didn't expect it. And she walked in and she said, oh, John, I've got a really big problem. And she could see my face drop because my expectation after yeah. this conversation was something else. And then she looked up at me and she says, I've got two really good ideas. I'd just like to have a chat with you about them to see which one I should use. And I just jumped up and we gave each other a big hug. We laughed. And from then on, you know, we got on great. So, you know, I think that, what I'm saying is, it's back to what you were saying before, is these people are like that for a good reason.
Yeah.
And as leaders, do we take our time to understand that? And do we do a job to get the best out of them, you know? And to realize what they can contribute. And I realize somebody with that attitude is really good at my side, because they make me think about things I don't see. They slow me down sometimes when I need to be slowed down. And I really value it. Now, it may also be that if that really doesn't work, maybe that person is in the wrong place. Yeah. But there's also maybe truly, you know, that this person is just stubborn and doesn't want to change. And, you know, then there needs to be a serious conversation. I'm not saying there's, you know, one solution fits all, but I just like leaders to have the attitude and the skills to deal with these people and these situations in a very differentiated way. I think as leaders as well, you know, we can help and encourage people. You know, I think as leaders, we need to be looking ahead wherever we are in the organization. And ask ourselves, do I have the skills for tomorrow as well as today? Do my team, do my people have the skills that we need to combat, you know, what's coming at us in the future? So I think, again, you know, it's a part of culture. It's an open dialogue talking about this and helping people develop, you know. It's an openness. It's a dialogue. You know, it's time for leadership. I mean, you know, one of my favorite flip chart is, you know, where do you spend your time? Do you spend your time yeah. doing, or do you spend your time leading? Yeah. And too many leaders spend their time doing and not enough time leading. It's a habit, you know, and as thus, you know, they don't deal with these situations and then they become a problem.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's a long answer.
No,
it's
great. No, I think I agree. You need to pick up on this, because it is there is a reason often for why people are saying it, and often they come with valuable points, and you need to kind of find being able to channel that in the right way. Yeah.
I mean, the question behind it, Matt, is, you know, do I blame somebody else or do I actually look at myself and just see what my contribution is to the difficulty at the moment? You know, it's a little bit of self-honesty.
Yeah, it is.
I think there's, you know, I mean, I think this is an aspect of life. You know, it can be in a relationship. It can be as a dad. You know, I apologized to my daughter yesterday because I was a bit snappy because I was, it was nothing to do with her, but I was, I've just had a difficult situation to deal with. And I was, it had distracted me and she'd said something and I was a bit snappy. And then I realized that I just said, listen, I'm terribly sorry. I apologize for my reaction. You know, I think in the content of what I said, it's okay. But the way I reacted was really not. And I'm terribly sorry. Having the self-honesty and the whatever it takes to, you know, to do that and in difficulties in the corporate environment, if I'm in a difficult situation, how I contributed to it and how can I contribute to it being better?
Yeah.
In the world, Matt, as you know, about something. But if you complain about something, you've seen something that's wrong. So why can't you then offer that person your perspective, maybe some ideas from your perspective as to how the situation could be better? And I think that's an important aspect of culture as well.
Yeah, I agree. To try to come with a solution, it helps tremendously. Sometimes there's a need for a shake up when the management is dreaming too blue sky, I think, and the concrete problems on the table can be useful to be put there.
I think, Matt, I'm just realizing, Matt, when we're talking about solution. I think that we can't always find a solution there and then, but I think at least what we're looking for, what I'm looking for, is that we can make progress, right? And if I say to you, if somebody comes with something that will help us make progress, then that's good. And it could be that from their perspective, they highlight a difficulty and they say to me, listen, I don't have a solution at the moment, but I realize there's a difficulty there. What do you think? Is it just me or do you maybe think that we should do something here? That for me is also, you know, a constructive attitude, which is helping us, as I say, is making progress.
Yeah, for sure. Each individual can be more can come with a problem and with a positive attitude. That is, it is possible.
Yeah.
You mentioned something with you were snappy at your daughter, and I find maybe move out of the corporate there. But when you become, if you try to become mindful and conscious. The most difficult is with the people that live with you and that are the closest to you. That's that, and they kind of, they never see you change. Really, it's difficult to. I think it's easier in a corporate environment than with the real close kernel family.
Well, why do you think that, Mats? Why do you say that?
I don't know. Maybe it's because you go so much on autopilot. I mean, I'm snappy with my daughter often, and I often regret it. It's like I don't give her enough time. It's just like even if we are around each other for the whole day, it's just like it's like all my consciousness goes out the window.
Matt, you know, we're all human beings, and we're all work in progress, right? And we'll never always get it right, and that's not the goal of life for me, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, if I'm aware of it, and I'm conscious, and I've got the intention to be able to do it in a good way, which is emotionally safe and secure for both of us, then, you know, I think that that's the thing, the only thing that we can do. And I think that, you know, one of the things business compared with private or is the relationship, the more open a relationship is, the higher the danger of being hurt.
Yeah.
you know. And so, you know, I think we are, and we all are, every human being, we're that little bit cautious, because the ones we love, we show more. And if we show more, you know, there's more space there where I can get hurt. So, you know, it can be this sort of, you know, swap between protect and openness. You know, and I just need to be living this really open environment. And in a family, we're all open for each other. So when something suddenly comes, then, you know, it hurts that bit more, right? Mm. And that's why, as I say, I think it's, you know, on the one side, there's the beauty of the openness of the relationship. On the other side, you know, there's that increased danger of being hurt. But, you know, life's not perfect. And, you know, as I say, as these things happen, can we forgive ourselves, learn and move on? And as I say, I think as well as what's important is, you know, is that we can apologize. You know, it's not our intention to go out and hurt people.
No, and I think what you just said, it's the most fundamental thing of trying to be more conscious and aware of this, that you can always start from scratch at any point.
Yeah.
You don't have to carry on the last mistake you did. You can start fresh and try better again. And and I mean, life is it's not meant to be a necessarily easy thing. A lot of things are happening. We all go through hardship, and life throws us curveballs, as you said.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it's nice to have a positive vision of where I want to be, so that when these curveballs or difficult situations come, I know where I want to get back to.
Yeah.
And we're getting a more philosophical and deeper here. I just think that there's an aspect here, both in terms of business but also private life, is what's my vision, my picture of the future. And I don't mean that in terms of, you know, what car do I want, what house do I want, and what watch do I want, but what aspects of quality of life do I want in this vision, you know. Who are the people I want to spend the time with? You know, what sort of things do I want to be doing to fulfill myself, to regenerate, to take care of myself? You know, it's qualities in that vision, also in the quality of family life, and how can I contribute to that, and how can I encourage others to contribute to that as well. And I think this is in the family, but also in the corporate environment, in a team. You know, often I get pulled in when things are difficult. And one of the things I do in working with people is get them to think about, well, how do you want it to be like? You know, rather than getting hung up and stuck up in all these problems, what's the island you want to go to? How do you want it to be? Involve everybody in that picture and that feeling, and say, well, come on, you know, let's aim to try and do that. Again, in the corporate world, I think that what leaders should be doing more, and the leaders I work with, I encourage that, you know, 3-4 times a year they're meeting with their teams in order to be able to look at this vision and to see how well they're doing achieving it, and maybe where they need to change the vision or what they need to do better to maintain it and to get to it. You know, I think that, you know, as individuals privately and in the corporate world, we don't spend enough time analyzing, reviewing and enjoying the good things.
That's true. And do they pick up on that these couple of years, times a year?
Yeah.
That's good. I think our line is getting wobbly here. I think we're hitting the 1 hour mark. Yeah. There. We should. What's up for you in the next time after the corona is over? When it's over, I mean, it can take forever. What's your?
I mean, at the moment, I'm enjoying the creativity of the situation. I'm missing the contact with people, working with them directly. But there's some, you know, good work going on, really helping people make progress. And I think that one of the things I'm working on at the moment, and I'll actually put on my website, is to get people to, particularly leaders, to reflect, self-reflect about this phase of their life as leaders in the corona world, and actually what have they learned from it for themselves, but also their teams, and what sustainable changes do they want to make based upon the experiences of this corona phase. And there I'm really, really encouraging people to reflect about that, because there's such valuable learning which is knocking around, and I just don't want it to get lost. And, you know, there's a guy I was talking to, and he's been making fresh pasta twice a week with his kids. And he says, I don't care what happens after this coronavirus thing. He said, I still want to do that. You know? So, yeah. You know, I just want to get people thinking about, you know, what's this, what change is this going to mean for me? And then I'll just keep doing what I'm doing, you know, working with people, helping them get the best out of themselves, each other, helping them develop the skills. And, yeah, we'll see what life throws at us next that we have to deal with.
Yeah. Where can people find you?
Pardon?
Where can people find you?
On my website. I'm an Englishman, right? And I've got www.john-ireland.eu. And this was when we were in Europe.
Yeah.
And as a delegate rightly says, he says, your email address and your website address is a bit of a paradox now, given you're an Englishman.
Yeah. But you live in Germany. Are you in
Munich? Yeah, I live in southern Germany.
In southern Bavaria. Yeah.
Pardon?
In southern Bavaria.
Yeah, I live just outside Munich.
Yeah.
I live just outside Munich with my family. Beautiful, beautiful place. Yeah, very nice environment. Very grateful for what we've got. And if anybody's would like to find me and get a broader picture of me, then it's there, and you can always get in touch with me through the through my website.
Yeah, I put the links up in the show notes, and I warmly recommend anyone to reach out to John for a training if you're running a corporate. Thank you so much, John.
Mats, I'd like to say thank you, because I think I realize I'm more aware of what we've done today is something I'm not good at, and I really don't do very often. Very rarely, first time. But I've really, really enjoyed it. I appreciate that you encouraged me to make a new experience, to be able to express myself, my philosophy, and thanks for the questions to get me to open up and express, you know, what I do and how I do it. So it's a real talent of yours. You seem to be doing it with a lot of people. And personally, I'd just like to thank you for a new experience for me. So thank you.
Thank you so much for these words, John. In fact, this is totally outside my comfort zone, or at least it was. That's why I wanted to do it. And now I feel more comfortable. But it was totally scary to do this. But I enjoy it very much to talk to people and being able to share it. I think that's beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, there's someone sitting on an island in the Indian Ocean listening to every episode. I think that's beautiful.
Oh, that's fantastic. Mats, this is well done, you. Thank you. You know, I mean, without your courage, your, you know, motivation and your curiosity to leave your comfort zone, you know, this wouldn't have been possible for that person and many others as well. So, you know, credit where credit due, you know, is due. You did it, mate. You did it. Well done.
Thank you, John. Talk to you soon.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to The Corporate Corner. If you want to know more about us, read our blog and see notes about today's show and link to the podcast, go to our website, www.thecorporatecorner.net. There you also find links to our social media presence as well as means to support us. If you want to get in touch or share a corporate experience, write us at info@thecorporatecorner.net. We would love to hear from you. Have an excellent corporate week and talk to you soon.